Welcome to Christchurch Manchester Sermon Podcast. CCM is one church that meets every Sunday in various locations across Manchester. For more information about who we are or about our Sunday meetings, please visit www.christchurchmanchester.com.
Right, the plan this evening is we're going to talk about the topic of love. And we schedule this in advance. So I've known for ages that today was the love sermon. And for most of the time, I thought this is going to be dead easy. You know, some sermons like that's going to be difficult to talk about. Love is one of the easy ones, isn't it? Because let's face it, everybody knows that love is important. Everyone knows that we should love one another. And so we're all in agreement. So read the passage, boom, go do it. And we're fine, we're golden. And then I came to prepare it. And I started to think, you know what? Maybe this isn't quite as easy as I thought it was going to be. Because, yeah, everyone might get on board with the idea of love, but do we even all mean the same word when we say love? So one of the common examples going around at the moment is Love Island. Now, I did some research on Love Island recently. Apparently, it is set in Mallorca, which is an island, so I'm going to give them like 50% credit that half of the name is accurate. But really, what's going on that show? Surely the word love, there has to be more to it than just what you see in Love Island. Maybe it's more subtle than that, though. Maybe if I asked you to bring to mind somebody who you love, who would come to mind? What sort of person would it be? Maybe someone in a romantic relationship, in a friendship, in your family. But usually, when we think of someone that we love, it's someone who makes us feel a certain way. It's someone who, when we're around them, there's a certain safety, a certain comfort, maybe a certain excitement, whatever it might be. It's all about what we get from being around that person. Maybe we buy into the Love Island definition a little bit as well. When I was a student, there was a group of us who were massively into the band The Darkness. I don't know if any of you know them. They have a song that love is only a feeling anyway. But Jesus said something different. He didn't think that love was only a feeling. He said, greater love has no one than this, that he would lay down his life for his friends. Now, I haven't watched Love Island, so maybe they're all laying down their lives for their friends and I've completely misjudged it. But I don't think that's the case. Maybe the person that you thought of when I said think of somebody you love, you're thinking of somebody who you've served. You're thinking of somebody who you've sacrificed for, who you've given up things so they are blessed. But maybe we have more of the darkness. Love is a feeling. It's all about how it makes me feel inside. I mean, part of our problem is we get our definition of love from ourselves rather than from God. It says in 1 John, in this is love, not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his son to be the propitiation for our sins. Love starts with God and with what he has done for us. So we talk about love, and we all think that we value love, but maybe we don't quite yet comprehend actually what love is. And maybe if we did, maybe if we understood the full depths of what's involved in love, maybe we wouldn't be as keen on it as we thought we were. Maybe we wouldn't like it after all. Now, the chapter of the Bible that I'm going to read today is like the famous one. You know, if you've been to like a wedding, you've probably heard it before. It's 1 Corinthians chapter 13. It wasn't actually written for weddings, but it was written to a church that was struggling, that had conflict, that didn't really love each other very well. And so Paul's trying to explain what love is. And a lot of people have read it and been inspired by it and thought, actually, we would like to celebrate this at our wedding. That's a good thing. I'm not criticizing that at all. But let's read it. It may be well known. So 1 Corinthians 13. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I'm a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but have not love, I'm nothing. If I give away all I have, and if I deliver up my body to be burned, but have not love, I gain nothing. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It's not arrogant or rude. It doesn't insist on its own way. It's not irritable or resentful. It doesn't rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. As for prophecies, they will pass away. As for tongues, they will cease. As for knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part, we prophesy in part, but when the perfect comes, the partial will pass away. When I was a child, I spoke like a child, I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I gave up childish ways. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I have been fully known. So now faith, hope, and love abide, these three, but the greatest of these is love. Let's set it in context. So the last few chapters that we've read have all been talking about what happens when a church gathers together. So it's been about who can speak and how they should present themselves as they do so. It's been about how you do communion together, what it's like as you eat together, as you break bread and take wine and remember the death of Jesus. It's all about spiritual gifts and different ways we can all play our part together as the body of Christ. And then this chapter comes right in the middle of it. And there'll be more on that to come, more on the gifts that we'll talk about next week. But this is right in the middle of it. So we might ask a question, what makes a church good? What makes a church good? Is it that the music sounds great? Is it that the preacher is really clear, really compelling, has got great stories to tell? Is it that the communion bread is like freshly baked and like, is it that there's great spiritual gifts? Is it that there are people who have amazing prophetic powers or can pray for the sick and regularly see them healed? Are these the things that make a church good? Now, they're all good things and they're all part of what a church should be. But I think this chapter here, being right in the middle of them, says that none of those things are right at the bullseye of what makes a church good. There's something more important than all of them, and that is love. A couple of weeks ago, someone came along here for the first time, and after the service, she said to me, what really struck me was how caring everyone was and how much everyone loved each other and loved me. I thought, that is brilliant. That's exactly the kind of thing that I want to hear. It's the kind of church I want us to be. Here's how Paul unpacks it. He says, if I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but haven't love, I'm a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. So, for example, imagine somebody is very articulate. They're able to speak in the tongues of men very well. They can make a persuasive case for Jesus. But then when they kind of come off the public speaking stage, then all their team around them, they're being snappy with, they're putting down, they're being sarcastic with, and they're not a very pleasant person. Well, that person, even though they can speak well, really, they're just a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. They have not love. Or think about someone speaking in the tongues of angels. Imagine someone has the gift of speaking in tongues and they can pray these amazing spiritual prayers in tongues. And yet the way they do it is they kind of cut across other people who are trying to contribute in a meeting. They say, actually, what you have to say isn't as important as what I'm going to bring. And they put other people down to use it. The power in it's gone. They're just a clanging cymbal or a noisy gong. Have you ever been in a conversation with someone and stopped listening to what they're saying so that you can think what you're going to say next? Yeah, you'll be speaking in the tongues of men, but you're not showing love. So what you're going to have to say next, it's just like gong, 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 and it's not what it should be. It says, if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. So this is sort of, if you're really gifted, you know, maybe you're a prophet, maybe you've got such faith and you can see miracles done. But do you know that there isn't really a correlation between spiritual gifts and character? Okay, it's not like God only gives the gifts to people who've got a lot of character. So some people can be gifted, but not use those gifts in a loving way. That's a bad thing. Even in the way we do it, always think about how can I serve others with my gift? Not how can I serve myself and promote myself over them. So if I give away all that I have, if I deliver up my body to be burned, but have not love, I gain nothing. So imagine you're really, really generous. Imagine, Colin brought up the offering and doing it with a smile on your face. But imagine you don't do that. Imagine you're doing it dutifully. I have to give, but there's no joy in your heart. There's no love for others. You gain nothing. There's no point in that. In that case, keep your money. What if I deliver up my body to be burned? You know, I'm going to do the heroic thing. I'm going to become a martyr for the faith, but I'm also going to be mean to people on the way. Well, if you can make the big sacrifice, can't you make the small sacrifices every day, again and again and again, even when no one is looking, laying down yourself for others all the time, showing love? These aren't bad things, they're good things, but it depends what's on your heart. Okay? If your heart is wrong, the good thing can quickly become a bad thing. If your heart's full of love, the good thing can become a great thing. Following Jesus, it's a team sport. It's not about getting the best gifts for yourself and doing all these kind of accolades in the faith yourself. No, it's about the way we relate to each other. It's the way we love one another. Love is the most important thing. So if we can agree that love is at the centre of what we should be doing as Christians, what does real love actually look like? Because it's one of those things it's easy to agree with, but it's easier said than done. Love is easy until you start thinking about what's involved in loving somebody. And then it becomes quite difficult. So I thought we would briefly, because we've not got all night, but we'd briefly look at 15 characteristics of love. I was going to call it 15 rules for love. That seems a little bit legalistic. So we'll go with 15 characteristics of real love. And we find all of them in verses 4-7 of our passage. So, number one, love is patient. So if you think you're a loving person, step one is to say, well, am I a patient person? The Greek word here is markothamai, which means high boiling point. Okay, do you have a high boiling point or a low boiling point? You know, some people, they've got a low boiling point. It's like the tiniest little thing just sets them off. I'll give you an example, right? Me, okay? I sometimes have a low boiling point and I need to be challenged to have a higher boiling point, okay? For example, when I'm driving in Longsight, okay? Now, Longsight is an awful place to drive through because people will step out in front of you, or cars will park in the wrong place, or cyclists will just cut out in front of you. And it's easy in that moment to have a low boiling point. Someone cuts out in front of you and it's like, why are you doing? You could explode easily. Love is patient. Don't have such a low boiling point. In life, people will get in your way. People will accidentally offend you. People will deliberately do things wrong to you. In all of it, be patient. Secondly, love is kind. Now, kindness in the dictionary is defined as friendly, generous, and considerate. I think that's a good definition. I think you need all three parts. Imagine somebody isn't friendly to you. They might be generous and considerate, but they're not friendly. It's like they don't really like you. It doesn't come across as kind. Or if someone isn't generous to you, they might be friendly and considerate, but they're not willing to sacrifice anything for you. Again, it's not kind. Or maybe they're friendly and generous, but they're not considerate. They don't actually think about what you really need. Again, it doesn't come across as kind. And this is, if the first one was about other people wronging you, having a high threshold for that, this is about having like a low threshold for just being ready to bless people all the time. Just look at other people, understand what they might need and give to them, and meet their needs wherever you can. Third characteristic, love does not envy. So if you love someone, but they've got something that you want, there's a little seed of resentment that can go in you. You know, this person, they're my friend, but they got that promotion that I wanted. They're my friend, but they've got the relationship that I wish I had. They're my friend, but they've been given this opportunity that I didn't get. And it starts to turn the focus from blessing them onto what you want. And you look at them and this jealousy bubbles. It's so easy to envy. You know, as I was preparing this, I wondered, and I felt maybe God was in this, but that for some of us, we might feel this way to siblings, that we've got brothers or sisters who always seem to have just got on a bit further than we have. And we're envious of the way their lives have turned out. If that's you, and if that speaks to you, I'd just love to pray with you at the end. Fourthly, love doesn't boast. Now, this is the flip side. The envy one is like if they've got something that you want, you resent it. This is like if you've got something that you think is better than what they've got and you love to kind of rub their face in it. I don't know if any of you used to watch the Harry Enfield show back in the 90s, but he had this character on it who would always go around pointing out how he was like considerably richer than Yao. And that was his catchphrase, and he wanted everyone to know where he was in the pecking order. We can do that, can't we? If we think everyone ought to know how much status I have, how much education I have, or what a nice house I have, or whatever it might be, and we just find a way to drop it into conversation. I can think of someone that I used to know who I would say is probably the smartest person that I've ever met in my life, and also the richest person that I've ever met in my life. And it took me about a year of knowing him to realize either of those things. Because the way he presented himself, he was just a humble guy who would serve other people, who would just kind of get involved with whatever needed doing, made no reference to it at all. It took me ages to figure out that, wow, he's actually smart. And, oh, he's actually kind of, he's loaded this guy. But he was never bringing it up. He wasn't boasting. What a good example. Fifthly, love isn't arrogant. Now, the word arrogant is used 6 times throughout this letter of 1 Corinthians. Here was a church that thought way too much of themselves. But true love is humble. When you look at other people, you realize you have something to learn from them. You don't just go into it as, I want to be your benefactor. I want to meet all your needs so I can be the one who's provided. And we have this kind of asymmetrical relationship. You're the benefactor, I'm the benefactor, you're the beneficiary. No, actually we have things to learn from each other. We should be willing to receive as well as give. Sixthly, love isn't rude. Now literally, this is love does not act inappropriately. So if you love someone, don't act inappropriately with them. This could have all sorts of applications. It could be being overly flirty or suggestive with people. It could just be being coarse or callous in the language we used. It could be objectifying people. There's all sorts of ways that we could be inappropriate. We should be wholesome in our love. Seventhly, love does not insist on its own way. Now, this is a hard one, right? I like to have my way. Does anyone else like to have your own way? You know, Frank Sinatra, he did it his way. And that's the anthem of our age, isn't it? I did it my way. Well, you read the Bible and lay down your way and let other people have their way. Lay yourself down to serve others. It's easy to get stubborn, particularly if someone's like pushing it a bit and they're like asking for things and kind of really stepping on your toes. It's easy to just get stubborn and say, no, because of the way you've been acting, I'm just going to hold firm on this one. You're not going to have what you want. It's not good. Eighthly, love is not irritable. Right, hands up if you know somebody who's irritable. Yeah, I won't ask you to put your hands up if you're sitting next to them. That would be a bit harsh. I also won't ask you to put your hands up if it's you. But I think some of us might be. Being irritable is when you're always getting annoyed, when little things just kind of wind you up. You're there, you make narky comments. You're hard to please. You're that person who's always going to kind of just get annoyed by whatever is going on. And there can be different things behind it. It can be spiritual things, like discontentment by not having a focus heavenwards. Maybe physical things as well, like being hangry or dehydrated or tired or whatever it might be. That factors in too. But whatever is behind it, if we're going to love people, we can't be irritable with them. 9, not being resentful. Not holding grudges. Another translation says not keeping a record of wrongs. Some people love to do this. There are people who love to find every little thing that you do wrong and they hold it against you and they make sure it's etched in their memory forever so they can bring it up whenever they need to. It's like they've got their little book of all the things you've done wrong to just unload at a various point. So every year at CCM, we do a preacher training course for new preachers. And there's 3 sessions. So the first 2, we go over how do you like get the ideas out of a Bible passage, and then how do you construct a talk out of it. In the 3rd one, people have a go. So people do a little short talk to the rest of the group, get some feedback on it, some kind of constructive pointers so that they can do it. Now, we did it 2 or 3 years ago, and somebody was doing their practice talk. She was about a minute in and she realised that she'd intended to read the passage at the start and had forgot to do so. She panicked and she just went, oh, and dropped a word that you would not expect in the middle of a preach. I'm not going to repeat in this one. Now, that's a pretty awkward moment in a room full of prospective preachers. What do you do? And we recorded these as well so that the site leaders got to hear like the talk and they could then like take people on the journey towards preaching. So we made a decision in that moment. We had a laugh about it. And then I said to her, right, get that recording device. I'm going to show you how to erase that file so that then when this goes to your site leader, it's gone. And they haven't heard that. And then we're going to start the talk again and we're going to do it exactly the way you wanted to do it. And there's no record kept of that wrong. In the way we treat one another, imagine someone's wronged you. Have exactly that same mentality. Imagine that recording device and say, right, I am going to delete this file. This isn't going to be there now in the way I relate to the person. It's gone. There's a completely clean slate. 10, do not rejoice at wrongdoing. Some friendships can just encourage each other into sin. But no, real love isn't going to go along with someone doing something that's not right. It's not going to take pleasure in the other person doing wrong. It's going to guide them towards what's right. 11th characteristic of love. Love rejoices with truth. Okay, truth and love belong together. Some people seem to think truth and love are enemies. Like you can be the person who says the hard truth. Or you can be the person who is loving and caring and compassionate. But they belong together. Timothy Keller says love without truth is sentimentality. It supports and affirms but keeps us in denial about our flaws. Truth without love is harshness. It gives us information, but in such a way that we cannot really hear it. Love and truth belong together, and when they truly coexist, that is a beautiful thing. 12thly, love bears all things, right? So people can be idiots and do dumb stuff. I'm sure we all agree on that. Love bears with them. Now, what we're not seeing here is like if you're in some kind of dangerous situation, just stay around. We're not talking about that kind of situation. But in our normal day-to-day interactions with one another, bear with the selfishness and the ignorance and the irritation that is there. If someone acts in a way that annoys you, just take the loss and bear it. Love believes all things. At Christchurch Manchester, we talk about having a think the best culture. We want to believe the best of one another. We want to believe that what's in someone's heart, that their intentions, their motives are good. We want to assume positive things. And we want to believe for a positive future. And we don't want to write somebody off based on struggles they have at the moment. We want to say, actually, I can see you on the other side of this. So Andrew Carnegie was a 19th century industrialist. And he often described the way you develop people is like miners digging for gold. And they might have to dig through a whole load of dirt to get the gold, but they know there's gold in there, and so they're willing to go through the dirt. You don't go into our relationships with people looking for dirt or focusing in on it when we see it, because each of us have the image of God, and that's the gold that we're after. Number 14, love hopes all things. What future do you see for one another? You know, sometimes you run out of hope for yourself. Have you ever done this? And you need somebody else who's got hope for you, who can see more than you see for yourself, who can point you to what God's calling you to and get your head back where it needs to be. Let's hope all things for one another. And lastly, love endures all things. Love is an endurance sport. Okay, we were just talking before the service about hiking up Snowdon. Okay, that's endurance, isn't it? You've got to keep going one foot after another, for hours. It's not like a sprint, a short burst, 10 minutes of energy and then I'm out. That's not what love looks like. It can be a hard slog through the easy bits and through the hard bits, but it's good and it is worth it. So that's what love looks like. Now, I said at the start, this is an easy sermon. We all like love, don't we? But when we see how Paul breaks it down, love is hard. This is a really, really hard thing, but it's a good thing, and it's the foundation of a good community. What makes church good? Well, all of this stuff that we've been talking about, love is at the heart of it. Think about all the things we do. Which of it will carry on into eternity, into the new creation, when Jesus returns, when heaven meets earth? What will continue? Will prophecy or tongues or words of knowledge? No, those things are good for now, but they'll pass away. Paul's not down on them. Next week he'll show the valuable place that they have. But what will carry on forward? He says there's three things. There's faith, there's hope, and there's love. And he says the greatest of all of them is love. So that should be the center of our focus in what we do. So I've got two big applications to finish with for you. Application number one is do it, okay? All the stuff that he said, just do it. Love one another in this way. And wouldn't your life be better? And wouldn't our community be better? Application number two. Realize that there's no way in this world that you can do it. Okay, so firstly, do it. Secondly, realize there's no way you can do it. The bar here is so high. Love bears all things. Which of us can live that out? Love endures all things. Which of us can live that out? So when you realize that you can't do it, what do you do then? Well, firstly, you try your best anyway, okay? This isn't a pass to not try living it out. But secondly, you look for one who's done it for you. And that's Jesus. Jesus is the ultimate example of all of this. We could read these verses again and put the name of Jesus instead of the word love. Jesus is patient and kind. Jesus doesn't envy or boast. He's not arrogant or rude. He does not insist on his own way. He is not irritable or resentful. He does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. He bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Well, this is a standard that we could never reach. Jesus has reached it. He's lived out this life of love to perfection. He's done so in our place. He's also done so for us. We are the ones that he's shown this love to. We're the ones that he's been patient with. We're the ones that he has been kind to. If he said, greater love has no man than this, that he would lay down his life for his friends, he then said, I've called you my friends. He laid down his life for us. If we can't do this, and remember we were made to do this, this is what God had called us to do. If we've fallen so far short of the standard that God has set, Jesus stepped in. He did it for us, then he died for us. And all that gap, all that penalty that we couldn't make up ourselves, in his love, he bore it on the cross for us. Now he calls us his friends and he calls us to step into this eternity of loving relationship with the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit forever.